Hello and welcome to another episode of CISO Tradecraft, the podcast that provides you with the information, knowledge, and wisdom to be a more effective cybersecurity leader. My name is G. Mark Hardy, and today we're going to be talking about competitive threat intelligence with a couple special guests that I have. I've got Jeff Micah from Security Bulldog and Andrew Dutton, who is his guest, and we think you're going to find this to be rather fascinating. Now, if you're not subscribing already, please do so. Our LinkedIn channel has a lot more than podcasts. We give a good high signal, low noise information that's out there. We're also on YouTube if you'd like to subscribe there. And share with your friends where you get your information for your career journey in cybersecurity and let them know you get it from here at CISO Tradecraft. So, gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Love to be here.
Yeah, a little bit of background. Jeff, let me start with you because you're the guy who's the founder and the start of the company, and so I thought you'd tell me a little bit about who you are and how'd you get to where you're at and why competitive threat intelligence.
Thanks, Mark. I'm Jeff Micah. I'm the founder of the Security Bulldog. We lower the cost and time needed to remediate vulnerabilities for enterprise cybersecurity teams using a proprietary AI-powered intelligence platform that we built over the past 3 years. We think that cybersecurity intelligence is really, really important because teams are overwhelmed by the amount of intelligence and data they have to go through. They don't have time to save time, and they're spending 2 or 3 hours to go through that intelligence, which is, of course, a large drag on their productivity and management of risk. So I'm happy to be here. I'm excited to be here with Andrew, who's one of our clients, and I'm excited for this discussion.
Well, that was great, and I loved how you got your little sales pitch in there with all the words. So well done, sir. It's what you need to do as a startup guy. Andrew, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, Andrew Dutton, as you can see, I've been in the business a long time. So I've actually done quite a few building different programs for different folks and throughout my career, mostly in the manufacturing space, some transportation, but really focusing in the manufacturing area. So I currently work as a cybersecurity architect for Sumitomo Chemical America. And we're, of course, a chemical manufacturing organization, and we're the America region. So, yeah, glad to be here. I'm glad you invited me.
Well, yeah, I'm glad to have you, gentlemen, and I think we're going to have a little bit of fun with this one. So let's start for our audience with the basics. If you already know this stuff, bear with me. It's not going to take long. But when we talk about concept of intelligence, okay, so you got IQ and things like that, that's not what we're talking about. Jeff, what are we talking about when we talk about intelligence?
I think it, you know, at the kind of highest level, most people, when they think about intelligence as sort of a national security team, or they think where the, you know, they're collecting all sorts of different kinds of intelligence from different sources to give, you know, the government, the federal government, an idea of what our adversaries and friends are doing. I think in a strict cybersecurity sense, I think it gets a little bit more specific in that we're not actively going to foreign governments and trying to give them secrets. It's more about collecting both open source threat intelligence is what the Security Bulldog focuses on, but also sort of threat intelligence feeds as well as sort of threat intelligence that you generate internally. So I think there are kind of like three buckets to like the threat intelligence thing. But I think that's important for, you know, in understanding your risk environment and how to prioritize limited resources. I think that's what you're trying to basically do is bring in data and information that falls under that intelligence bucket.
So data and information that's typically with respect to a third party.
Correct.
And because if it's your own data, it's not really intelligence. It's basically your management data. Now, you'd already started getting into the next idea, which is threat intelligence. And so it sounds like information and data against those who can or potentially want to do you harm. And so all of a sudden, of the universe of intel out there, yeah, this is a specific window. And now you have CTI. Can you tell me what CTI stands for?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, cyber threat intelligence is, again, you know, anything that can help protect better against cyber attacks for a cybersecurity team. And it could be something as mundane as news or podcasts or, you know, chatter on the dark web. It falls into a lot of different buckets. You know, the cyber threat intelligence, again, is a larger bucket than just pure threat intelligence. Like, there's other stuff beyond threats. You know, what's going on with your products, what's going on with your software supply chain. There's lots of other stuff that can fit into that bucket.
Right. So with that understanding, Andrew, in your role, where you're dealing with this in a manufacturing or an industrial organization, where would you get a cyber threat intelligence? I mean, I would think if you're chemical manufacturing, chemical recipes haven't changed in a while, and that's pretty straightforward. Or How does that instantiate itself in your line of
business? With any, I think really within any cyber program, you know, you're always going to be looking for intelligence about who's targeting you, right? What types of things they're doing against you, not just within the chemical manufacturing organization, right? Or manufacturing or an industrial arm, right? But in general, what are the things going on in the world today? What are they taking advantage of, right? I kind of go back to looking at the type of intelligence, right? You know, you have things like strategic intelligence you're looking for, right? That, you know, that where am I, what's my program going to be look like? What are some of the gaps that I have? You know, that's really that high level strategic, and then more like tactical operational intelligence, you know, what, who's targeting me? How are they targeting? What are the ways they're going to be vectoring in? And then also that operational intelligence is how are my systems working, right, within my ecosystem, to sort of be able to, you know, put those together and, you know, come up with a good plan.
So cyber threat intelligence then is sort of an inject into your decision-making process, where you're able to see what the potential bad actors are, or competitors. It may not be bad actors, but there might be somebody who could affect your production, affect your marketplace competition. And then doing cyber threat intelligence means, well, we're not just out there like spy versus spy, somebody walking around a street corner or doing dead drops with things on a street corner, but rather looking that you'd find out in the IT world. And I think, you know, somehow I'm thinking it's, you know, CTI, I always saw that as competitive threat intelligence. Back in my mind, I'm thinking, did I introduce the show that way? If so, okay, I'll correct it. Cyber threat intelligence. But does cyber threat intelligence differ from traditional threat intel that's been done over the years? And if so, what's the hallmark or what's the earmark?
That's funny you ask, G-Mark, because I actually started when I was 18. I joined the military, right? Went in, did my ASVAB. Recruiter told me, hey, you've got a good score. We've got this great job for you, right? And then wound up, you know, being a signals intelligence analyst, was at Field Station Augsburg, went to NSA. And I kind of look at the cyber space. I use a lot of that intel and analysis, you know, training, right? It's almost exactly the same in a business. Now, I'll go back to what you just said in that spy versus spy. That's happening right now. But usually I'm ingesting that mm-hmm. in a commercial product. So maybe I'm buying a dark web monitoring product. Well, they have, you know, they hire people with dark web personas that are being spies in the dark web, deep dark web, to spy on those same people. So it really is going on. It's just happening in a basement, right? And these people take their personas with them, right? It's very important that they're, you know, they're people that people respect, right, in that dark web. So it really has a lot of same types of personas going on, right? You have the spy versus spy, which you'll probably get, you know, a person like me is not going to have a dark web persona that I've used for 10 years and got that, right? I'm going to get that from a commercial product. But then there's open source intelligence that's everywhere, right? You know, then there's that strategic type of intelligence where I'm getting things from other feeds, right? And that's really where Jeff steps in, is really getting me as much data as I can in a single area to sort of look. So, you know, I really do think it is a lot like that, you know, nation threat.
Yeah. Now, so is Jeff, I mean, are you the guy sneaking around the dark web? Is there evil Jeff at Onion? Or Dot Onion, or is there, you know, something out there, Micah Man, who sneaks around? Or how do you actually gather this threat intel? Does it always come from the dark web, or could it come from open sources and things like that, such as reading CVE reports and things?
By the way, my first AOL tagline way back in the day was actually Micah Man. So it's funny that you should bring that up. If anybody was doing a dark web sweep on me,
a little bit of intel on you.
Anybody would be actually that's not hard information, but so I think that, you know, when you're thinking about, you know, the vast amount of information that's being generated by, you know, millions and millions of defenders and, you know, millions of attackers and nation states, for anywhere from, you know, a single person up to a, you know, a well-funded nation state, and the amount of stuff that's out there to gather together, some of it's very easy and obvious, like, oh, the CVE database, that's a database of vulnerabilities. if you're attacking, you want to know what the CVE, you want to know about the vulnerabilities just as much as the defenders want to know about them. And so I think that a lot of that stuff is relatively easy to collect. There's a lot of it. Sometimes there isn't a lot of it, but I think some of it's very difficult to collect. And I think, you know, you get into an environment where, you know, cybersecurity teams attacking and defending will not only just do what they're doing, but also trying to deceive the people that they're trying to attack, just the way defenders try to deceive those who are trying to attack them, right? So I think that it's not only what there is to collect, how easily or difficult can you synthesize and analyze it? And then, you know, is that actually true information that you're collecting, right? So there's a level of complexity that sort of springs up from, you know, what you're bringing together. And yeah, so there's dark web stuff out there, and I think there's lots of different tools that do that. And that's certainly part of everything you want to bring into a 360-degree view of everything that's external to your environment. You kind of have a responsibility to bring in to make those, you know, highly confident decisions on what to do, what not to do, or nobody knows what to do right now. So I think that it's an incredibly interesting, complicated part of the cybersecurity defending.
Yeah, because if we look at the cyber kill chain, trademark Lockheed Martin, or I owe him a nickel if I don't say that. The first step that they do is reconnaissance. Really, you want to go ahead and collect intel on your target. Now, is cyber threat intel a diode? That is to say, it's only good guys collecting on bad guys, or is that same term used the other way around when the bad guys are trying to go ahead and figure out who to go after? And if so, how do we as defenders make their information harder to obtain, make it more difficult for them to get an accurate targeting data, if you will, to launch and come after us? Is that, so it's more of a counterintelligence question.
Absolutely. I mean, you should be looking at what information you have available, right? Why is this available? If you don't have some sort of business decision, right, to, you know, it could be something as simple as having a port open, right? That's an open source intelligence, you know, that they could be leveraging to figure out what's going on. You know, how do they figure out what kind of systems you have, right? Those little things.
Yeah, port 23, what could possibly go
wrong? Exactly, right. Open? You know, I just think that some people don't necessarily take that data and then think about how it could be used against you, right? And that's where the deception comes in. You can look into multiple types of deception, honeypots, right? Gathering information, you know, making sure that your information isn't out there, right? That nothing is available easily, right? Because that's a lot of things is just easy type of information that the bad guys are looking for. If they're really targeting you, they're probably going to be paying somebody as an insider threat to get the information they want, right? If they really want to target you that way.
That's actually a good point about the insider threat. Now, Jeff, of all the things that he's talked about, I know you gave you a nice little elevator pitch at the very beginning as you introduce yourself, no problem with that. But do you do any of that in the services that you provide, help people out with deception, help them set up honeypots and the like, or are you mostly on the offensive collection of intel and then using that to say, hey, we're not going to do everything for you, but this is a core function, we help you with it?
Yeah, I think that there's a number of different, you know, spoofing and honeypot best of breed tools out there that, you know, you'd want to like deploy or look into. And I think that's, you know, certainly part of the, you know, mandatory part of what you'd want to do, given you have enough resources to do that. You know, just general, you know, best practices when it comes to cyber hygiene and cyber resilience, if you don't have whether you have resources or not, like, you know, changing your passwords and doing training for your people and not, you know, right? Not clicking on phishing emails. There's some stuff you can do that would be, you know, pretty basic fundamental stuff. You know, we at the Security Bulldog don't do any of that sort of spoofing or honeypot stuff. And our approach is that, you know, there's a lot of manual kludgy stuff that has to happen by human beings in the cybersecurity team. And our focus is how do we use artificial intelligence as a productivity tool to help them do what they need to do faster and quicker? Because in the end, I think everybody will agree, you know, it's about time, right? In cybersecurity, it's, hey, they're going to get into your system, right? No system's foolproof. Human beings are not foolproof. They're going to get in. How fast can you find out about it and remediate? So for us, anything we can do to compress that time about, hey, something's happened, it affects us, we need to do something about it. That's what we're really focused on is using AI to in that specific thing. So we fit in a suite of tools that, best of breed tools that a cybersecurity team should use.
And let me add to that, Jeff, if you don't mind. So really, Jeff's tool is in the strategic intelligence space for me, right? That's gathering a lot of different articles or podcasts or, you know, all different things that are out there for me to ingest easier in that strategic space, right? But he's not going to provide me specific OSINT information about my organization. That's where I'm going to use exposure and ASM tool to gather that type of data against myself. Or he's not going to tell me data within my own organization, right? I'm using my own tools, whether I have an XDR tool or an NDR tool or different types of endpoint tools, right, to gather that data about me. But he's really in that strategic space, saving me time, right? That's really where he is helping out. Is that good? Good.
Got it. And of course, this isn't an ad because you're a customer. But, you know, thought occurred to me, we look at the concept of cyber threat intel. I understand the importance of it. A career military officer, I get that. But then I take a look at things such as, you know, Microsoft having what, you know, the U.S. government has sort of described a catastrophic failure in their ability to go ahead and protect encryption keys for certain significant dignitaries and executives in the U.S. government. And they exchange nasty grams. It's kind of fun if you read the accusation and then the response, Microsoft basically saying, well, you know, it's a nation state funded actor and they can act without consequence. So isn't that a government job to create consequence, not a private company? That aside, why would things like that happen in the first place? Is it because Microsoft doesn't collect cyber threat intelligence, or they do, but these actors are so skilled as to create little or no footprint to find it? When we see big deals like this, do you go back and can you say, yeah, if you'd worn your seatbelt, this wouldn't have gone bad. If you had done CTI right, it wouldn't have gone bad. Are there situations where you've seen that that could have helped? And are there situations where you say, against certain actors, it just won't help?
Well, that's a big topic right there. You, so,
yeah, we've only got 45 minutes for a show, too. So,
yeah, well, and yes, you know, yes, absolutely. You know, we mentioned insider threat earlier, right? If you're not capturing your intelligence on your humans, right, your human population, right, you're not going to catch when one of your developers is injecting code they're not supposed to, or if your code pipeline doesn't have certain software security tools embedded, right? So that could happen. You know, if you're not looking at your vendors, right, third-party management, then what was it recently? AT&T, I think it was, and they said that one of their vendors possibly leaked this information, right? You know, so that there's a lot to that. But if you're not understanding where your threats are, and that comes back to the CTI question, that you're getting targeted in these areas. And I guess I could give you a very small piece, right? Is like, hey, if your email security isn't telling you who is getting targeted in your company the most and how they're getting targeted, whether that's a BEC or some sort of spear phishing, right? Then how do you know who to train, or how do you know to go to the finance department or to the human resources and say, hey, this is what's happening against you. I want to help you. This is what you're going to see, right? So that's a very small example, but yes, if you're not looking at all that intelligence and then using that within your program, like Jeff was saying, into a 360 program, right? You're going to have a gap, and it's going to be utilized against you.
Now, as you had mentioned, Jeff, you're using AI to do your CTI, you know, acronym soup here. It sounds like I'm back in the military again. But I presume adversaries can be using artificial intelligence as well in terms of their management of their own intel, which would then be interpreted by us as cyber threat intelligence. Is this going to be a radar detector, constant technical battle going along, or is there some end in sight that says it's more likely that if used properly, this party will come out on top of the other?
Well, I think that's a huge, gigantic question, right? I mean, I think that the answer is obviously yes. I mean, the history of cybersecurity, intelligence, and warfare, you know, for the last 5,000 years kind of bears that out, right? Somebody gets an advantage, which the defense gets an advantage, and the offense has to think about it. How do they overcome that thing? So I think the tit for tat, you know, who's going to have the upper hand for any particular period of time, I think is a really fascinating one. And I think that AI being deployed and it breaking out of whatever guidelines I think it is, you know, but I'm, you know, we've had, you know, our CTO created our, you know, natural language processing engine about 10 years ago. So I definitely fall in the camp of, you know, it's not anything to be terribly afraid of. It's a productivity tool. It knows what we teach it, right? So, you know, I always say that, you know, when we're talking about our tools, value props, what can it do? It go through a needle and a sack of needles really, really quickly with relatively high accuracy. And we'll talk a little more about that later. But again, what do human beings do? Human beings do talking to other humans and puzzle solving, right? We're able to reason beyond what an AI can do for now. So I think that when we're looking at deploying AI in a real sense, a lot of what they're doing it for is doing those scans and those churning and that analysis extremely, extremely quickly beyond what a human being could do. But again, to your point, I think they kind of like will be shuffling up. And I think that's what we as defenders have to spend a lot of time is like, well, okay, what are they doing on that other side and how can we overcome them? How can we try to get a couple steps ahead? The defenders always have the challenge of, you know, we have to be right 100% of the time and the attackers only have to be right once, right? So there's always a slight chance of, okay, they're going to get in without you knowing about it, which, you know, the big talk we had about, you know, cyber resilience 5-6 years ago, I think is a smart one. You just got to assume that they're in and you have to figure that out. And that gives you the mindset of, okay, how do we put things in defense in depth and do zero trust and all the things that people like to talk about, which are awesome things to talk about. But yeah, I mean, there is going to be kind of a tit to tat with AI, and there has been, right? It's not a new technology. People on both sides have been using machine learning for a decade plus, right? So I think that's a very true way of looking at it, but it is nothing new.
But one of the things when I first started speaking with you a few months back was trying to get my mind around the value of what you're doing is to make the problem of intelligence evaluation and decision-making easier for the human. As humans, we can manage 7 ± 2, I think, different things at the same time, unless you're at CISO, and then that number goes up by an order of magnitude, it seems. But the idea is you have so many moving parts in there that you end up not being able to get things going. By being able to use AI-enabled cyber threat intelligence, does that then do a lot of the pre-screening? It says, pay attention to that. How does that AI fit in there? Because we've heard so much hype about AI in the last 12 plus months or so. I'm trying to understand, what does it actually do for you other than, for example, saying powered by AI on the label?
Yeah, and I think in a real practical sense, you know, I like to joke around, the working memory of a human being is 7, right? So why would you give anybody more than 7 things to look at, right? And I think the AI is perfect at that, right? AI and people working together, or any AI working, you know, security bulldog and a cybersecurity practitioner working together, it's going to do what it's really good at, which is processing vast amounts of information really, really quickly. And then it can how you present that to the human then becomes the really, really interesting critical part. Right. If you're just adding 1,000 more things to your SIM or requiring, you know, a human being to do another Boolean search on a browser tab or their, you know, on the browser, or again, you wasted time, right? That's not the important part here. The important part here is how we present that information to the human being as they're going through what we call that logical process of what happened, does it affect me? And if it does, what do I do about it? Which, when you think about it, it's a pretty simple set of questions, but it's ubiquitous. Everybody in cybersecurity asks those same exact questions every morning when they go to work, or they have to do it multiple times, or whenever it is, right? And it's a simple set of questions, but it's incredibly complicated to go through all that stuff if you're a human being doing manual pooling searches or relying on kind of like a fixed fee. I think that's where AI comes in. It's using AI to do the collection. It's the top of the funnel is everything. So that whole problem with cyber, what did I miss, kind of goes away because AI can collect everything and LS it. But then we also want to present the information in such a way where, hey, human, here's a story. And there's a recommendation based on your IT environment and your personal preferences and your role. Here's 3 things to look at or 4 things to look at. And we want to remove the amount of work that a cybersecurity team has to do. And we have to think a lot about how we enable the human beings to be, you know, remove the cognitive burden on the human beings to make high level decisions, right? Again, like, what's the minimum amount of information we can give a team so that they can make a highly confident decision about what to do or not to do? And in cyber, that's good enough, right? We are never going to have 100% certainty on most things most of the time. And even sometimes when you think something's patched or fixed, 2 years later, it could blow up again. So it is really about how do we enable the human beings to do their job in a way that removes that burden of searching through thousands and thousands of things, which humans are terrible at.
Yeah. Now, a thought occurs to me that AI, generative AI, it tends to hallucinate. It makes stuff up. And that means it can't possibly understand what is even true. So why should we even trust AI to do this work? Couldn't a capable cyber adversary put out enough disinformation or misinformation that would get ingested into the AI model to throw them completely off track? Kind of like the old World War II exercise where, hey, we're going to try to convince the Germans that the Allies are going to land at Calais instead of at Normandy, or in Gulf One when there was a lot of tactical deception and electronic deception done for the initial invasion incursion into Kuwait. So how do we defend against that using AI, or does AI make us more vulnerable to that?
Good question.
Questions out here.
It's interesting you mentioned those too, because the level of deception, you know, for Normandy with the fake tanks that they blew up, and it was crazy. But yeah, that is a big issue. You're seeing it now with generated AI videos, right? How do you tell you if you've got enough data on someone? That'd be usually a very, big figure, right? With lots of videos, you literally splice it together and make them say whatever you want nowadays, right? But how do you detect that that's happening, right? How do you detect when that poisoning's happening, right? Is a huge issue in a business. I'm not sure, and that's probably more Jeff's side, is how are we in the back end fixing that?
So I think that, AI's, it's a software program that's designed to do certain things. So what we try to do, it can do. And if you mess with that, it can make it do bad things, right? So I think that like anything else that you rely on in cybersecurity, you can't really trust any of the inputs that are coming into you, right? So, I mean, when we spend a lot of time every day training our natural language processing engine and the semantic scores that it generates off of live content, hundreds of thousands of times every day, right? So it's an issue for everybody who runs an AI. We have our own proprietary one, so we spend a lot of time, what we put into this thing and what comes out of that thing and telling it consistently over a long period of time, this is good output and this is bad output. But again, somebody could get into it. And that's where having guardrails just for the management of your AI, however you deploy it, of saying, okay, here's acceptable sets of outcomes, and you can get some outlier out there, and having that tagged of like this accuracy score is out of the guardrail, and that's a problem, and we need to address that. So I think there's ways to manage AIs like you'd manage any piece of software that's in your environment. This is what a Cisco's router is supposed to be doing, and here's the things that it's supposed to be shooting off, and it starts having anomalies. Okay, it's not operating the way it's supposed to operate. So I think that there's ways of managing that. And they're not computers. They're machine learning engines that are set up to do specific things with specific outputs. And like any human created system, garbage in, garbage out is always kind of like the way that's going to work. So, I mean, if you have a spreadsheet, you put bad numbers in, the spreadsheet will kick out some number that may or may not be accurate based on the reality that you live in. But it's the same sort of thing. So I think that, it, like any other tool, it has to be managed by human beings, and anything that's created by humans is not perfect, and it's going to have its things, and you just got to know that going in. And we spend a lot of time talking about accuracy and saying, okay, here's the real world stuff, and here's our output, and making sure that they're lined up and that we're spitting out information and results. And again, trying to enable a process to work faster and better and quicker. There's going to be 70% of the stuff could be automated and orchestrated. There's a patch. Okay, send it over to NinjaOne or whatever your patch tool is, and it can patch that stuff. Okay, we'll collect a lot of that offset that goes into your record. But I think the value here is where there isn't an obvious answer and there is an obvious thing. You're going to need something that like, hey, this isn't 100% accurate, but it's 92% accurate, and that gives you enough information to go do a remediation or fix a patch or do a mitigation, or there isn't a remediation or a patch for this particular thing. So, oh my God, we got to really focus on how to actually figure this thing and monitor the good guy's side on who's working on this and what sort of results are going to be able to spit out of that of the community solving these really complicated problems, like the XY, you know, backdoor that just happened last week, right? That's going to be a festering wound going on forever, right? So I think AI really comes into its own, where 2 + 2, they're, you know, we don't know what that equals, right? So I think that the fact that it is a little bit, it has the ability to loosen it, it's actually a benefit, because they can think out of what a normal human being logically, a computer would actually, or a calculator would actually spit out. So I think it's actually a benefit, but you have to know that. And I think most people this year, ChatGPT and some of the other ones out there, like, they give you answers, but they, you know, they're like an overly confident 9-year-old, right? We think ours is a overly confident, 32-year-old, who's been trading on cybersecurity for the past, 10 years. But that's, I think they just have to understand what it is. And I think a lot of people kind of understand now in a way that they didn't understand, last year, on what it can do and why. And okay, I think people understand that.
I get that. So when I'm getting the sense, and I think you've laid out a pretty good business case, that AI is important. It helps us deal with greater levels of complexity, rapid collection, sorting, and then ultimately presentation of information. And now this instant correlation and comparison to perhaps past information can show you when the threat landscape has changed. So it sort of seems like if I'm doing cyber threat intelligence without AI, it's like bringing a knife to a gunfight. You're just going to be behind the power curve. So what are the AI tools that are out there, and are they well developed? Is this something that you're saying, hey, ChatGPT, answer these questions? Are you building your own AI engine? Is this a proprietary offline model? Opening the hood a little bit to take a look at what's running underneath. How do you guys do it?
So it's a natural language processing engine. So we're gathering in currently news, CVEs, the MITRE ATT&CK framework, episodes of podcasts. We're going to be bringing in indicators of compromise, indicators of attack, SBOM, VEX data, mitigations. Basically, again, building that 360-degree view. And, what a natural language processing engine is trying to create similarity scores or semantic analysis, basically, like, here's what these words and verbs mean, heart attacks versus strokes versus, using medical terms that have synonyms, like, using, the analysis of the language itself allows you to say, okay, here's these disparate pieces of information in these content repositories that it's really hard to go from one to the other. Human beings are, it's not good at that. The tools we have to use, which are typically Boolean searches, are not good at doing this. There's no analysis at all. So basically we can push all of those different types of content into the large language model, and it'll do those semantic analysis and say, okay, hey, based on your IP environment, based on what you want to do, here's some recommendations from all these different content repositories of things you should take a look at. And again, the use case is, guy sitting in a sock with their hair on fire, try to figure out, put out fires as quickly as possible, just saying, hey, there's this new CVE, or hey, there's a new tactic that's been set up over there, or hey, this other thing up there, you should take a look at this. And again, prioritizing stuff in your, I'm talking about the use game, where, prioritizing stuff is like the key output. So basically what we want to do is, across all of these content repositories, let's analyze them very, very quickly to what the needed output is and spit out that. So it's a pretty, like I said, it's a natural language processing engine. We've just been training it for a long period of time. So it's no different than any other one. I think having a proprietary, your own one, I think for anyone who's thinking about using an open source one, I think it's better because you can sort of manage the inputs and manage the outputs and train it, over time. We're constantly working on, improving the business solutions around it. I think that's the key thing here. Is that the core of an LLM is what it is. Mm-hmm. It's how you build the business solutions and the inputs and the outputs around that, I think, are the key differentiator and the key sort of value proposition of any IT tool that you're looking at. Is, okay, well, what did you build around this thing to make it, work better and more accurately and avoid hallucinations, whatever possible? So I think that's sort of the key thing.
So, Andrew, for you as a customer, and understand that Jeff has got Security Bulldog, which is in the startup phase. And again, Jeff went through the same engine that I went through 10 years ago, the accelerator called Mach 37. That's how we met. I was there at the demo day, and I thought, wow, this is kind of some really cool stuff. Let's get him on the show. But the question I have for you, Andrew, as a customer, is that there's big companies out there like Palantir or the like. They have all this intel and threat engines and things like that that are pretty expensive, but sometimes they work pretty well. What is it for you that made Jeff's solution superior to that and made you want to go ahead in that direction?
That's a good question. So one of the things about Security Bulldog is I'm using it for strategic intelligence, right? And there's a value proposition, right? Any business, we only have finite budget, right? So it's not just about how great you are, right? But it's about how much value you could bring to my business and how I can operationalize you, right? So I can go out and buy the most expensive whatever it is, and if I can't use it, right, I don't know how many companies I've gone into, and I start looking at their technology, and they're just not using it, right? They're using 5% of the technology, right? So it's easily consumable. It fits in with my other systems. It fits in the value proposition, and it's just really a no-brainer. So that's really why we went with Security Bulldog, and really just a value proposition. You know what I mean? But there are, like I said, there's other things like I have other Intel platforms for deep dark web, right? That is proprietary, right? That you're not going to necessarily get that data through Security Bulldog. There's other OSINT that you can get specific things about my organization that I won't necessarily get through Security Bulldog, right? So there's multiple levels of threat intelligence that I want to be leveraging at all times and bringing together. And matter of fact, yesterday I was on a podcast, or not a podcast, but a webinar, and this gentleman was talking about OSINT and using generative AI, a couple of things that he brought up, and there's some really great things going on there. But a couple of things he brought up is, you know, running your own, if you're going to be doing it within your own security practice, right? Because you don't want to be using something that can be poisoned by someone else, right? You really need to be worried about that. And you could use it for anything as little as writing some Python code or, you know, doing some IOCs or, you know, just making sure whatever your piece of that puzzle is, because there's just so much in cyberspace, right? But how can you leverage it and with creating that 360 loop, right?
So if I'm a CISO or a director or VP, somewhere in there, I'm in a security leadership role, and I'm listening to this, I'm saying, I can see part of my business that could really benefit from it. But typically, when you try to go ahead and add a new tool set, you have to meet some sort of requirement. Does it increase our profitability? Does it reduce our risk? Does it identify new customers? Could it help me get into a new line of business? How do you figure out the ROI for cyber threat intelligence? And compounding on that, typically on that return, how long does it take before you actually say, hey, we're ahead of the game now, as compared to, well, it takes a little bit longer? How would you help a business leader in the cyber world articulate a business argument for this?
Man, that's another tough thing. First of all, it's business. You have to understand, one of the things I always preach is understanding how to communicate with your leadership, right? And they're all different. Right. So you need to understand how to communicate that ROI. Some people don't even like the word ROI anymore. Right. They want to, you know, I've mentioned word value. Right. Some people like it differently. So first thing is understanding who you are talking to. Right. And being able to communicate with that person. But threat intelligence is one of those things. And cybersecurity is one of those things. It's very difficult sometimes. And, you know, I had this conversation with someone the other day. They're like, hey, man, you know, nothing's happened in the last couple of years. Why do we need any more tools, right? But something happens next week that but my job or our job in the cyberspace is to provide risk intelligence to our business, right? It's their job so being able to quantify that within that communications channel, whether that be financial, right? Looking at different types of research that says how much a breach is, right? Average breach in the United States or whatever country you're in, right? Using those types of things to try to quantify that risk, and then allowing the business to accept the risk, mitigate the risk, you know, decide to go with that or not, right? So, yeah.
So it's really, it seems to me more on the risk management reduction part rather than increased profitability. And of course, some of these things stem out of reducing your risk. We don't lose a product line. We don't lose a key customer because somebody has done something. and the like. And so what we look at then in the holistic approach of risk management, and risk management is really about what? Risk is measurable uncertainty, when you get right down to it. April 8th, I had a chance to go out and watch the total eclipse. I was in Ohio. Now, that's one of those things where, what's the risk of the total eclipse not happening there? I would say, well, that's not, the risk is the wrong question. Other than the fact you might not see it because of clouds, we had good visibility. That was cool. But what you find then is that for business leaders, managing risk means taking that uncertainty of what could happen, and typically uncertainty about what could go wrong, and reducing the likelihood of the things that go wrong to an acceptable level. And if you know what your potential threat actors are up to, if you're able to juice up your cyber threat intelligence program on steroids by using a well-tuned AI model, you're starting to go ahead and see ways that you could use this for essentially competitive advantage. Not so much that you're getting an advantage over the guy next to you, but if he can't see the pothole and you can, and he falls in and you don't, you gain kind of an indirect advantage there. So it looks like the whole concept of CTI really is going to become more and more of a key component for organizations who are doing holistic risk management. So I find this rather fascinating and interesting, and wow, we've almost burned up our entire clock. So based upon that, any last thoughts that either of you gentlemen have on follow-up, and then also ultimately, how do I find out more about this if I'm interested?
Last thought?
So probably one of the things I did want to mention, and holistic is a great word because it's all tied together, right? You know, it is so tied together in everything that you're doing within a cyber program. I say the other one piece is humans, right? That human intel and diversity within your own team. I don't see enough diversity within teams, and you know, when I say diversity, I'm talking about, you know, other people that think outside the box from what you're thinking, right? Because it goes back to that intel piece, is right. Sometimes you have to be thinking like a hacker, right? Or a black hat or a gray hat, right? So I think my final thought would be making sure that you're diverse, not just in your threat intelligence or your cyber program, but within the people within there as well, and making sure that you're providing them with the training or classes or whatever to get them thinking about, so that you have multiple ideas coming out, not just everyone's, you know, an analyst, right?
Got it. Jeff, your closing thoughts, and of course, how do we follow up and get more in touch with you if we want more data?
Cool. To get back to the risk management thing we were talking about, I think that, you know, managing your risk, like I said, you're never done, you're never complete. But I think that, you know, the way that I try to look at it is you have a team, there's not enough, you know, people or resources for any cybersecurity team, right? So, you know, when you're managing your risk, you have, you know, five guys and you'd like to have seven, the five guys are doing the work of seven, and then they're going to get burnt out. And, you know, having manual clutchy parts of their job where they don't like it and they're going to burn out or quit, go somewhere else. You know, I think that's, you know, using a tool like the Security Bulldog to say, hey, you know, my guys are wasting 20% of their day looking up stuff on the internet, right? That's a dumb thing to do. Let's use a Security Bulldog to take that part away. And A, they can do more high level stuff to manage your risk better, right? So instead of just clutching through what happened, they can do, hey, maybe we'll do some training. Hey, we should do some stuff about phishing, right? We can do more high level, more impactful things for our organization to help us manage our risk better. Or, hey, if we have no budget and it's a pure ROI thing, we can't hire two more guys. Let's make our five guys productive enough where they could do the work offset. So I think there's a lot of different ways to look at the ROI thing. And again, if you're spending, you know, if you have 50 guys in your security team and you're spending, you know, $5 million on salary and they're wasting two looking up stuff on the internet, the ROI is pretty amazing, right? If you're thinking about the ROI of what AI can do in our organizations. And I think in cybersecurity, AI is going to hit the ground and be adopted quicker and faster, I think, than other aspects of the enterprise, just because time is such a factor and the risk to the company is such a huge one in most cases. So I think that, you know, that's, you know, my main takeaway on using AI to help manage your cybersecurity risk. But to learn more about Security Bulldog, obviously go to our site, securitybulldog.com. I'm Jeff Micah. Happy to talk to you at any point. I'm sure my email address will be connected to this podcast, wherever it is, but reach out to me. I'm the founder. I'd be happy to talk to you anytime about any of the topics that we've talked about today. So thank you, Mark, for having us on. Thank you, Andrew, for joining us.
Andrew, thanks for joining us. And to our listeners out there, thank you for participating in another episode of CISO Tradecraft. We hope you found this episode on cyber threat intelligence to be of value to your career and to also help you communicate that value to others in your workplace. Again, if you're not listening or following us on a regular basis on CISO Tradecraft, please do so. We go ahead and put a lot of information out there to help you in your cybersecurity career journey. So thank you very much for listening. And until next time, stay safe out there.